Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, is Spirit Airlines going out of business? Perhaps not, if the government can help it. And a record 12,000 people apply to be air traffic controllers. Those stories and more next in the travel news.
Hyatt becomes the latest hotel brand to massacre their rewards chart. Your points are going to get you fewer rewards. In our Smarter Traveler segment at 11:22, we'll remind you just how the rewards game is played and who makes up all the rules.
People are consuming less alcohol. So how does a destination like the Napa Valley deal with that? We have an interesting take at 11:35.
The airlines are sending a mixed message. Baggage fees are going up, but overhead bins are getting larger. To check or not to check your bag? That's the question at 11:50.
Glad to have you along on Saturday morning or at your convenience on the podcast. Either way, welcome to this week's edition of The Travel Guys.
On the road again.
I've been everywhere, man.
Aruba, Jamaica.
Solo Seattle.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
Let's go on with the show.
Yes, sir. Live and in living radio once again here on a Saturday morning. It's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, also known as the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Thanks for coming along. We're brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, who just returned home with hopefully all of the folks that they went there with, a trip to on Route 66 Part 1. And Mark, I don't know, with 10 days, you got to be a little exhausted. That's a lot of travel. It's a lot of bus.
Little tread wear there, you know, over 10 days. Yeah, but we took 10 days to go from Chicago to Oklahoma City, which is only about, what, maybe 800 miles, something like that. So do the math. Right. It wasn't a tremendous. I mean, we had a couple of two-night stays, one in St. Louis, one in Springfield, Illinois. And I don't want to go, I don't want to bore people to tears because we've talked about this quite a bit on the radio program, but Route 66 really is a slice. If you can only do a piece of it, you can't travel the whole road. I would highly recommend that the you know, just pick out a state. Each state is different. The stuff in Illinois is different from the stuff in Missouri, which is different from the places that you see in Kansas and Oklahoma. Kansas only has a 13-mile stretch of the old highway, but has several cool things and people. It's really about the people. You go out and you see these oddball attractions that were interesting things along the highway when they created 50, 60, 70, 100 years ago along Route 66, which celebrates its centennial this year. And you meet the people who run them. And the other thing you have to remember is that places like that, it's all about making a buck. It's always been that way. It was always create something that would get people to pull over and stop along the road and take a picture and maybe come into your gift shop or buy gasoline from you or eat at your restaurant or whatever. And it's still that way. It's just harder for those folks because the interstate's got people zipping by. So they have to attract people off the road people. Hey, listen, I wanted to talk about I wanted to give some kudos to Southwest Airlines. They have more flights than all the rest of the airlines combined here in Sacramento. So a lot of people, love them or not, have to use Southwest Airlines to get places. And we flew our group to Chicago and home from Oklahoma City. And on Thursday, our incoming plane had a problem and it was seriously delayed. And we were not going to make our connection in Denver. And I had 23 of us total. So sometimes when you're traveling in a group, it's a disadvantage. But sometimes it's an advantage, especially if you have a friend behind the counter. And on Thursday, we did. The lady in Oklahoma City who ran the Southwest station explained to me that an incoming flight going out to Denver had 88 people connecting on it, 88. An incoming flight that was then going out to Orlando had 3 people connecting on it. So if she could get them to flip the inbound aircraft and give the now arriving on time flight going to Orlando to send it back to Denver, a lot of those people would not miss their connections. And since there were only 3 connections in Orlando, if those 3 people missed, it was a lot less than 88. And she convinced whomever she had to have convinced on the phone at Southwest that that was the way to go. And so that's what they did. And that got us to Denver, 12 minutes before our plane was supposed to leave. In Southwest has an advantage over United in Denver. United is split over three concourses. You get there 9 minutes before your United flight is going to leave, and you got to change concourses, you're kind of screwed. But with Southwest, you're on the same concourse. So it's just a matter of how far can you run and how fast. And some of my travelers tend to be, let's just say, mature travelers. And I'm getting there myself. So getting halfway down the concourse in a short period of time is a challenge. And Southwest held the airplane for 20 minutes.
Wow.
20 minutes so that we could all get there. And you get on the plane and all these people are sitting there, you know, facing forward. And they're all giving you the, where the hell have you been? Look, you know, we've been waiting for you and we're not happy about it. Kind of look.
Do you think they made an announcement to the people on the plane and said, look, we have 23 people.
We're
going to wait for them. I know it's going to be inconvenient. If they do that, you know, I think most people that are on the plane, they're, you know, they're
I think so, too. And as I walked down the aisle, because we were in the exit row or something, and it was so we were partially down the plane. And I said to people out loud, I said, thank you for waiting for us. Sorry to keep you all held up, but thank you. We appreciate it. And the other thing that happened that doesn't always happen, when we got to Denver, they said, look, it wasn't just us. There were a lot of other people who had very tight connections. They said there's about 40 people on this plane whose planes are waiting for them. So if you would be kind enough, if you don't have an immediate connection, if you would stay seated and let these people get off the airplane, it would help them and help us. And by God, in the first half of the aircraft, most of the people who didn't have a connection stayed seated and let some of us off. It didn't work that way through the whole plane, I don't think. But nonetheless, that made it a lot easier for us to get on our way. So maybe a little bit of the Southwest magic is back. I don't know. But those were two separate situations. And the other thing was, when we ran down the concourse and got to the connecting gate, all the Southwest employees were smiling, and they were all, okay, you're here. Take a breath. It's okay. The plane's here. Everything's going to be fine. I mean, it was just, instead of, you know, glad you're finally here. Good God Almighty. You didn't stop to use the restroom or anything, did you? You know, and that kind of thing.
That's fascinating. And then, like you say, I mean, Southwest is taking a lot of heat, but that's a good story. And you know, it says a lot, just not only to speak to Southwest and their people, but the people that you were flying with, and you know what, folks in general. You know, it's like that song says, most people are good.
Yeah, well, it there was a lot of karma was in our favor. And you know, you don't, when you get in those situations with the airlines, you don't always feel like that they're helping you or that they really give a damn. And on Thursday in Oklahoma City and in Denver, two places that are not down the block from each other, it felt like that the Southwest employees really gave a damn about whether. Now, of course, they have an ulterior motive, too. If 20 people get stranded in Denver, they had already told me they didn't have seats on other aircraft the rest of the day for our people. So now we're going to have to spend the night, and that's going to cost them a chunk of cash because it was a mechanical delay. And so they were looking out. Don't make no mistake. They were looking out for their own best interest also. But along the way of that, they looked after us, which is kind of sort of, when you're in the hospitality business, you're in the tourism business, you're an airline, a restaurant, a hotel, an attraction, or whatever. Isn't that kind of sort of what you're supposed to be doing? And so in this case, and it's not the first time. I mean, we have so the Southwest Skycaps in Sacramento are the best people on the planet at what they do. So if you, it helps to have little pieces of the system that work in your favor instead of against you. And that's enough of a rant. I've taken up a lot of time here.
All right. Thanks for that. We are the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom. And at the top of every Travel Guys radio show, besides stuff like that, we bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel news. And as the music cues, Mark brings us up to date on the week's travel news.
Yeah, airlines are kind of coming and going this week. Spirit Airlines, which was rumored to be days from, is still rumored to be days away from liquidation, in part because of the increase in fuel costs. And of course, they've been in financial trouble for a while. And I've said it more than once, you know, I wouldn't buy a ticket on Spirit Airlines unless I was flying tomorrow. And right now, I wouldn't buy a ticket on Spirit Airlines even if I was flying tomorrow. They could disappear quickly. Or, as the president has suggested, maybe they get a cash infusion from the government, or maybe the government even buys Spirit Airlines, which is a little bit weird. But remember, the president owned his own airline at one point, Trump Airways. Mm-hmm. It isn't around now. So, but anyways, he was in the airline business once, so it obviously fascinates him. You know, United talked about merging with American. United's talking about buying JetBlue, which kind of seems to make sense. The JetBlue CEO says, we're not going bankrupt. Don't worry about us. We're going to be in business forever, which, of course, is what you have to say, whether it's true or not, because you want people to buy tickets on your airplane. So a lot of the pieces on the monopoly board in the airline game are moving all over the place. And when it's all said and done, probably if the government doesn't step up, Spirit Airlines is probably done. I don't know what Frontier, which has the same business model, but has made some changes lately. The crickets are incredibly quiet when it comes to Frontier, so maybe they're in good shape. Americans got problems. They haven't been a good airline for a while. They've got a lot of customer service problems. They've got a lot of internal problems. They've got to work all that out. But, you know, these things go in cycles. United was in one of those cycles for a long time, and has kind of pulled themselves out of it. So it's just, you know, there's, what, now four major carriers if you count Southwest. And somebody has to be on the top of the heap and somebody has to be on the bottom at any given time. So we'll see what happens. We might come out of this with one or two less airlines. That is never good for those of us on this side of the counter, because the less competition there is, the higher the fares are going to be. And speaking of fares, the airlines are telling us that these fare increases we've seen that are due to fuel costs, don't look for the fares to come back down. Some fares have gone up really dramatically. Shopping for fares to Las Vegas for groups over the last couple weeks later on in the year, we found the fares to be 30-40% higher. You know, you used to be able to go to Vegas for, you know, 2.25-2.5 round trip, and now it's closer to 3.25-3.5 round trip. Yipers. That's only Las
sure
Vegas.
Does.
Yeah, that's
absolutely
not far away. All right, one more quick airline thing here. Delta is expanding its Shake Shack partnership. So more Delta aircraft are going to have burgers on board. They've been for the forward cabin, but Delta is talking about the possibility of bringing more burgers on board, which means the coach people could buy them also. Reviews on the burgers are mixed, and I will tell you over the years that burgers have been tried on airplanes quite a few times with very mixed success. Shake Shack, I don't think they have the world's best burger to start with, but anyway, their burgers are showing up on more and more Delta flights. According to the American Consumer Satisfaction Index, Americans are happier with travel these days. On a scale of 0 to 100, lodging, airlines, car rentals are all higher than they were a year ago, by between 2 and 4%. The only group that's down, this is kind of interesting, are ride shares. People are slightly less happy about ride shares.
Yeah, going back to taxis, I'm one of them.
Yeah. If you had the opportunity, you walked out the airport door, and there's a line of taxis sitting there, or you've got the Uber app on your phone, which one do you do?
I do the taxis now, yeah. Because the taxis are right there. You never find the taxi. Well, I mean, hypothetically, if they were both there, I don't know. Sometimes it's just easier just to walk up and flag the taxi. Mm-hmm. You don't have to get your phone out. I don't know if there's a safety factor or all the hubbub about how rideshare can be safer, and then now there's all kinds of things about how it's not safer. And now there are lawyers that are actually going after rideshare people who did bad things to passengers. It's become a category, like ambulance chasers.
Wow.
Instead of, so I don't know what to tell you.
My rideshare experiences have always been, I can't think of one. I don't rideshare all the time, but I mean, you know, probably a couple of times a month. And I don't remember any, but I'm with you. Any bad experiences, but I'm with you. If I walked out the door and the taxi, to me, I'm an old school guy. The taxi's got a meter. I can see what it costs. The taxi company is probably not jacking me around with surge pricing and all of this BS. Taxi drivers over the years have always known where they were going. So sometimes they're interesting people. I don't know. Taxis aren't always as clean as ride shares. Downside?
Yeah, here again, it's city by city.
Yeah.
In regards to that.
Probably experience by experience. All right, one more story here before we wrap up the news section. I found this to be kind of fascinating. Amnesty International and rights groups issue a World Cup travel advisory for the U.S. That's the headline. They are warning tournament visitors of, quote, rising authoritarianism and increasing violence in the United States during Donald Trump's aggressive immigration enforcement. They point out to people that not everybody who has been flagged, arrested, accosted, whatever, by ICE has been somebody who deserves it. And their point here is that if you're a person of color and you're in the United States and you're in a place where other people of color who frequent, that you may be a target. I find this really, really, this is the first time I've seen one of these. It comes from a London newspaper and then has been picked up here. But Amnesty International, which is a pretty big group, telling people that if you're coming, people of color, if you're coming to the United States for World Cup, you need to bring all your paperwork and all your everything with you, which I guess probably is what you should do when you travel anyway. So maybe that's not that big of a deal. But anyway, I found it just interesting that they were warning travelers who were coming to the United States because of rising authoritarianism and increasing violence towards foreign visitors. Interesting. That's your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom. Don't forget now, links to our special guests and so much more can be found at TravelGuysRadio.com. More to make you a smarter traveler just ahead, moments away. Stick around. Yeah, it's us, Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Heading down 50 towards the downtown, Thursday. I look over and there's a Waymo. See the big old thing on the top of the car? You know, I thought it was one of those cars that used to take pictures of neighborhoods and put them on the Google Global map thing. But no, there it was. But the odd part about it was there was somebody behind the wheel.
When they test in cities, they have drivers. But when they, of course, then when they figure that they've gotten the test out of the way and they've gotten the approval, then there are no drivers.
Yeah, what do you do for a living? I drive driverless cars. How about you? All right. Hyatt.
Wait a minute. Listen, before we go to that, Anthony, are you around? Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Hey, we were just talking about taxis versus ride shares. You know, coming out of the airport, you know, would you get a ride share or would you get into the taxi? It was right there. You're a little younger than the two guys who are doing the radio program. Which would you do? Which would you lean to?
I've done both. I used to live in San Francisco and they have the taxis like right there, and I would get out. One time I came out and I got into a taxi and it was way more expensive than what my Uber would have been that I checked. So I kind of just, I check the prices on the rideshare apps, and I just, from that one experience, it's just based on cost. I'm not too worried about the safety or anything like that. I think it's pretty equal. But, sometimes I use like Lyft or Uber, but it really depends on the cost. It's kind of my whole thing.
Yeah, no, but what a good idea if you've already pulled up on your Uber Lyft app or your rideshare app, and it's shown you, you know, how long it's going to take for the car to get there and how much it's going to cost. And now you go up to the taxi cab driver and you say, hey, you know, what's it going to cost to get to such and such a place approximately? Why, that's smart. That's a good, that's an excellent, smarter traveler idea. A way to actually compare pricing on taxis versus versus Uber. So thank you for that, Anthony.
Yeah, and then there's also those people who are like, I will do it for cheaper, and I don't go with them. That's the sketchy part. You know, when you're walking to the rideshare, and then uh-huh. there's the people who are like, well, we'll do it cheaper. Stay away from those guys.
Yeah, that happens a lot. How do you know what the basic fare prices are for a taxi in a particular town and region? Because they do kind of all start at the same level, but without having to like ask them.
Well, they're supposed to, Tom. They're supposed to. Most cities, municipalities, whatever, have an ordinance, you know, a rule that somewhere on that meter needs to be posted. It's the flag drop is this much, and then it's this much per mile after that. So you kind of have to do the math in terms of, you know, you're traveling 5 miles away and it's $5 a mile, that's 25. The flag drop is $8, that's 33. What did the Uber? So in order to do what Anthony's talking about, you got to work at it a little bit. But considering that the differences in the fares between those two entities can be 30-40% easily, and I've found opposite of what Anthony found is that it the taxis fairly consistently in the situations I've found have been cheaper. So, you know, does a taxi driver who drives every day know how to get around better than somebody who drives part-time for Uber or Lyft? I don't know. That's probably another consideration. Anyways, thank you, Anthony, for your input there, buddy.
Of course.
Let's see here. We were going to talk a little bit about award charts from Hyatt Hotels, and this has been a subject we talk about a lot here. If there's only one thing you take away from this radio show, just it should be this. Rewards programs are designed by the companies that design them. Heck, my company, Sports Leisure Vacations, has a very simple rewards program. It has never changed since we created it 30 plus years ago. We've never changed anything in it, the rewards redemption. But one reason is because we don't give away gobs of points to people for doing this or that or whatever, as the airlines and hotels and stuff do. They're always trying to get you, hey, get our new credit card, 80,000 bonus miles, it'll take you to Poughkeepsie and back. And so you sign up and you think, wow, and then you go and check how much the ticket is to Poughkeepsie and you find out that 80,000 doesn't cover it anymore. So these guys, this is a bank that the airlines, the restaurants, the hotels, whoever has a rewards program has set up. And if they decide that it's not working for them on whatever level, as Hyatt has done now, increasing their rewards chart from 15 to 67%, creating instead of three categories, off-peak, regular, and peak, now there are five categories to spread. The awards cost more. I'm not a World of Hyatt guy, but if you are a World of Hyatt person, your points are worth less than they were at this time last week. And I don't know what will happen next week, but Hilton has already done this. Regularly, Hilton hotels around town here, pre-airport departure hotels and stuff that used to be 30, 35,000 points are now 50 or 60,000 points. The airline, the entities all control the issuance of the currency, and they control the redemption of the currency and what it costs and how you can do it, and if you can even do it for certain products. So if you're a lowly person on the totem pole, you may not even have access to first-class seating with your points on some airlines. So there are, if you don't have the credit card with Delta, you're automatically paying more to redeem points for any ticket on the airline. So there are some things here that you need to know basically the rules. They make the rules. You have nothing to do with it.
There you go. And so with that being said, what's your advice to people that have, and I know what it's going to be, that have amassed a lot of points and are just sitting on them waiting for something?
Yeah, hell to freeze over or whatever, I don't know. But if you have a lot of miles or points somewhere, if you have enough in your restaurant, in your, you know, I don't even know that Texas Roadhouse has a program. But if you have enough points there to get yourself a couple of free dinners, just get them. Just redeem them. You know, unless you're saving for some aspirational award on an airline, but just know that you're saving till you get 600,000 miles so that you can get these two first-class tickets to Singapore. Just know that by the time you get to 600,000 miles, it may cost 800,000 miles, or the seats may not be available to point people with points or miles on certain days. So the cash-back credit cards start to look better and better. A credit card that gives you 2 or 3% of your expenditures back can maybe be paying you better than a rewards card can be. But just know that all of the rules, did I say this once already? All of the rules are set by the people who issue the points and the cards. So you have no real recourse when something like what Hyatt has done here or what has become a regular occurrence with airlines and hotels and whatever. Some of us are old enough to remember when pricing wasn't dynamic. That's all I can really say.
Yeah, well, you know, that been a long time ago. Well, all right, we are Mark and Tom, the travel and entertainment guys. By the way, links to our special guests that we have on the program can be found at travelguysradio.com. And last week we had Joe from
Joe Brancatelli. Yeah,
Joe Brancatelli, and he has a great take on credit cards and points and such. So if you want to go back and check that show out, you'll learn a lot of stuff if you missed it. All right, coming up next, more on the Travel Guys. Do you find that people are drinking less alcohol around you? Do you know young people particularly that say, it's not so much for me? How is that impacting the folks over in the Napa Valley? We're going to talk about it, what kind of diversity is going on there. Next, here on the Travel Guys.
We're going places with that sports leisure flair, a world of adventure, and we take you there.
Every New Year's Day in Southern California, the Tournament of Roses Parade is held right before the big football game comes up in the afternoon at the Rose Bowl. You can go and be in the audience for that parade as it marches down streets of Los Angeles and Pasadena early on New Year's Day. People who have never been there before, it should be on your bucket list. Sports Leisure Vacations could take you there on a package that includes a day on Catalina Island and some other Southern California attractions. You'll even get the opportunity to see the parade floats being built, which in my opinion is better than the parade itself. Sports Leisure Vacations has the Rose Parade Spectacular, and you can check out all the details at sportsleisure.com. Take yourself, treat yourself to the Rose Parade in Pasadena this New Year's Day. Check it out at sportsleisure.com.
Cool. Yeah, Rose Parade. You've done that a few times. And there's also a big Rose Parade event up in Oregon, if I'm not mistaken.
They have their own Rose. That's very observant of you, Mr. Romano. Yeah, they have in Portland, early in the summer, when roses are blooming, they have a Rose Parade of their own and a whole big two-week spectacular event that they, all kinds of flower shows and all kinds of stuff like that leading up to the Rose Parade. And actually, you know, in Southern California, generally the weather is tolerable. It rained on us last year, I will tell you that, full disclosure, at the Rose Parade. The great thing about the Portland one, it starts inside the arena. So
yeah,
you can buy seats in the arena, and so if it's raining outside, don't matter to you because you're indoors and you can watch the parade at the beginning, and then it heads out on the streets.
Very cool. All right, let's jump into our subject. Mark, you sent me the link to this Travel Weekly article that I thought was intriguing. I'm very familiar with the Napa Valley area. I have friends that live there and work there, and you know, I'm real curious. I haven't had a chance to speak to them about this article and as to what they're seeing at those that work at the wineries. Has there been a shift? And this article says that in many ways there has been. Explain, please.
Well, the percentage of people who say they drink in the 18 to 34 age demographic, which is what they see the most of in the Napa Valley, is down 9 percentage points in 4 years. And, I mean, that's a lot. It's down from 62% to 53% in just that very short time window. One of the suspicions there is that the weight loss drugs that have become very popular with people tend to suppress alcohol cravings. So people who are on those medications tend to desire less alcohol. And also, of course, once they have lost some weight and feel good about it, and then they're probably going to adjust their diet to try to intake less of the stuff that made them overweight in the first place. So that's as kind of a societal change. And this is not the first place that we've seen this subject come up in this way. But also, in general, forgetting about the weight loss drugs, in general, societally, we are drinking less alcohol than we used to. So for a place like Napa that makes their money off of, you know, I mean, let's face it, the Napa Valley is not known for its theme parks. The Napa Valley is known because it's a place where you can go and drink wonderful wine and tour beautiful new and old wineries and learn about the product and taste it. And, you know, you can immerse yourself in it. And that's been big business for them for a long time.
Yes, it has. It's become a destination from people all over the world. It wasn't that long ago. We saw some surveys and talked to some people, and especially from other countries, that the Napa Valley was the number one destination, even ahead of Disneyland.
Yeah, yeah.
For people from China and so forth. And San Francisco is a big draw. But the Napa Valley, but here again, you know, there's a wide range of ways of presenting wine. And generally speaking, wine is presented with some sort of food to go along with it to pair with. And, I thought this article was really revealing when it talked about one winemaker who had done it for years. He switched. He's become a coffeeteer. He's brewing coffee. Mm-hmm. And he's got all kind and coffee, much the same as wine. You taste it, you compare it, you talk about it, you talk about the beans, like the grapes and so forth. And it's a completely different experience. And Mark, we were talking before the show about how that people are now wanting more than just wine tasting. They're looking for an experience.
Yes, yes. And the experience needs to be more than just a overpriced wine tasting in a $300 hotel. I mean, the Napa Valley has basically people who, you know, my company used to take, we now go down to the Napa Valley. It's never more than a day trip because there's just no value in a lot of the hotels down there. If you live close enough that you can make the drive there and make the drive back, then like you said, the Napa Valley is not inexpensive. So that's one thing that they're going to have to, that the tourism people down there are going to have to deal with. It's fine when people have money and they're all coming down there to spend it in gobs. But what about the average person? Are they going to abandon you completely? Is that, you know, and I think that the Napa people are realizing that they're shifting towards something that many destinations in the country are shifting towards, and that is wellness tourism. You know, Calistoga, one of the five towns in the Napa Valley, is famous for its hot springs, but it's been promoting wellness for 150 years. You know, it's like, come here and take in the waters and feel better and be better, and it doesn't have anything to do with wine. So now the rest of the Napa Valley, I think, is starting to look at that sort of an approach. And as you said, people want an experience. So the experience doesn't have to be a ride on a roller coaster or, you know, a trip underground into a cave or hot air ballooning or whatever. It can be wellness. It can be going someplace that feels good to be there and doing things that make you feel good. And maybe that's a massage, and maybe it's enjoying a glass of wine or two. And it's not all that different from some of the things that they've been doing, but maybe it's just a little bit of fine tuning, and maybe it requires a reordering of, you know, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 reasons to come to the Napa Valley. maybe number five now becomes number two, and when number one becomes number three. You know, maybe the reasons that you want to tell people to come to visit you are a little different now. And I think that's what this article is talking about when it says Napa Valley moves beyond the vineyards. And it's a tourism destination that is maturing, basically, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people, those that grew up in the Bay Area, maybe went to school, can remember back in the early 70s, maybe late 60s, when the very first Napa tasting rooms and so forth started opening up and drawing people from all over the world. It's not something that's even though the vines have been there for a long time, if, from what I can gather, it's not something that's been there for decades or for centuries, rather.
No. And to show how much that area has grown up, the Napa Valley, the Sonoma County Airport, which is named for Peanuts creator Charles Schulz, who spent most of his life in that area, it was a nothing airport for a long time, and it's not a nothing airport anymore. It's become, you know, for many years, if you wanted to go to the Napa Valley, hey, psst, fly into Sacramento, because you don't have all that hassle that you have in San Francisco or even in Oakland and all the traffic and all that to do. You can fly into Sacramento, get a rental car, you'll be in Napa in an hour. Hey, guess what? Who needs Sacramento anymore? You can fly into the Sonoma County Airport and be in Napa in 15 minutes. So that area is definitely maturing as a tourist destination. But so for people from here who are going there, you know, avoid big holidays, pick and choose your spots. We can go just about any time. So don't go on a weekend. If you've got people visiting from out of town, take them up to the Napa Valley during the week, do a little homework. It's likely that you'll find places that have dining discounts and things like that, maybe not in July, August, and September, especially September, early October, when you get into the harvesting of the wine down there. That tends to be a busy time. But the point being that there are times when you can get in and out. It might not be cheaper. It might just be a better quality experience because of the number of people that you have to share it with. So I think those are some important points.
Anthony Lucas, right there, and I know he's listening because he's running the controls. Anthony, are you a wine kind of guy? I knew you fall into the age range that we were talking about. Is a visit to Napa something that you or your friends do?
I've never done it. My grandparents actually make wine. They're from the Azores. So I know a little bit about wine, but I think I do fall into that age demographic where alcohol is just like not really my thing a whole bunch, you know? Like I actually am a coffee person more than I am an alcohol person. So that's kind of a good comparison of a shifting away. But I would love to go to Napa. I've camped in Napa, but I've never been there for wine.
Well, there you go. Now you can go for coffee and wine.
Yeah, exactly.
And snacks. Yeah. A lot of good food, too. Thank you.
Let's see here, Tom, before we hit the break here, have a couple of things that I want to mention. In the headlines at the beginning of the show, we talked about how a record number of people had applied to be air traffic controllers, and then something happened to the story material, and it got out of that pile, and I came across it here. Over 12,000 people applied to be air traffic controllers. That's great because we've been short of, I can remember us being short of air traffic controllers 30 or 40 years ago. So it's been a job that pays well, has an early retirement age, but it is a very stressful job and it's not for everybody. So that it's great that a lot of new people are applying to be ATCs, but the fallout number will be huge. So it's good to have a bigger number to start with, so that hypothetically you will have a bigger number at the end, so that things like what happened at the LaGuardia, you know, they work some of these big airports now with two or three controllers, especially when they get to odd hours of the day, and it's just not enough people. It's not fair to the people who are working there. Yeah, they're making good money, but the chances of something going wrong, like what happened at LaGuardia a few weeks ago with the Air Canada plane, the chances of something like that happening go up. And it only has to happen once. So I'm all about, as somebody who, and I've mentioned before on the program, my father was an air traffic controller most of his career. And it's an honorable job, but it's not an easy job. So it's something that you want to do. It's something that will take all of your concentration and all of your efforts. So good luck to you if you are one of the people in that new surge of folks, or if you're thinking about it. There are a lot of pluses, but it is a very high stress job. If you can handle that, then good for you. Hey, Tom, I saw something. You mentioned Joe Brancatelli, who was a guest on the program recently, and Joe has his travel blog at joesentme.com, which I find to be one of the most fascinating, because Joe's from New York, and he doesn't really hold back on opinions, and his blog is written with a little bit of attitude. He had something in his blog this week that I haven't seen this anywhere else. TSA agents, after the first week of May, the money that the agency used to pay agents is, quote, going extremely fast, and once that happens, there are no emergency funds after that. In the case you were, this is a spokesperson now for government, and in case you're wondering, the House and Senate have made exactly zero progress agreeing on a traditional funding situation, which leads me to say, is it possible that we're going to go through this again? Very soon.
Oh my gosh.
That they're going to run out of, it's the 27th of March when the president signed an executive order to pay TSA agents. Yay. But it was the longest shutdown in history. And there are other parts of the government, Department of Homeland Security, et cetera, that are still not funded. So what do these guys in Washington do? I mean, for God's sake, I don't see, frankly, when I told my staff about this the other day, they said, you mean we're going to go through that again? And I said, I don't think so. The midterm elections are getting closer and closer, and that's something that is very visible and very newsworthy, and I can't imagine that happening again to the TSA agents. But apparently, from what Joe is reporting, at least, the money that they're using to pay the TSA agents, that bucket is going to be empty soon. And they will have to find money from another bucket to keep paying them. And we are closer to summer. So, it's just beyond me. It's beyond me how the people above can't see enough of the people below them to realize that this is a lot of the Congress people and stuff, as we talked about, you know, they have special escorts through the airport and special ways to get in. And so they don't have to deal with all of this. So, you know, come join the average guy for a change and stand in a TSA line. And then let's see how you feel about it after that. Anyways, that's reporting from Joe. So we'll keep an eye on it. And since we're in late April and they're talking early May, we won't have to. My guess is if this is a problem, it's going to start showing up in other places in the next few days.
All right. We're Mark and Tom, the travel and entertainment guys. When we come back, to check or not to check your bags. Details straight ahead, right here with the travel guys. Hey there, my friends. Next week on the Travel Guys, it's the Travel Guys mailbag day. Go to travelguysradio.com right there on the homepage. You can leave us a question, a travel question of any kind that you might have, and we'll answer it on the air next week. And if not, Mark will answer it on his own directly to you. So next week, it's the mailbag. Great thing about mailbag is it answers not only your questions, but the question that lots of people may have about their travel. So mailbag week next week.
Baggage fees. Speaking of bags, baggage fees are up to $50 at a lot of airlines. And now we didn't even talk about what they did to the second bag. You know, sometimes you check the first bag or an oversized or an overweight bag. Those prices went up way more percentage-wise than just the first bag check. So the headline here is bag fees just hit $50. This comes from Christopher Elliott's website. At what point do you stop checking luggage? So it's really, there's an easy way around this, and that you got to get a credit card for the airline that you fly with.
Yeah.
If you fly, and usually those credit cards will cover, you know, everybody under your reservation. So if there's four people in your family, four times 50 is 200. You got to come home. That's 400. There aren't too many credit cards that cost more than $400 a year.
Yeah. Now I know Southwest has really pushed that. And do all the airlines cards also offer free baggage?
Every single one. And the question becomes, too, at what point, let's forget about having the credit card for a minute. You know, at what point do you just say, well, hell, I'm just going to, you know, I've seen people bring steamer trunks on the airplane. I'm just going to bring this through security and bring it to the plane. And, you know, maybe they will say, hey, you know, we're looking for volunteers to check bags here at the gate, and because we're not going to have enough room. And you tromp right up there and give them your bag, and now you avoided the baggage fee. So, and also, the airlines, don't you think it's a little strange? The airlines are raising baggage fees, and they consider that an important source of income, yet they're making the overhead bins larger on planes so they will hold more bags. And they make these big announcements about, you know, you can only have two items and you need to consolidate and all this stuff. And then they let some guy drag literally a steamer trunk past them with absolutely no, you know, warning or anything besides have a nice day. So it seems a little strange to me that the airlines are trying to get money from you for checking bags, and they're trying to get you to check bags at the gate for free, and they're making it more possible for more bags to be carried on the plane. It just doesn't make any sense. I wanted to go back to our young guy in the crowd again today, back to Anthony, and just say, Anthony, when you travel, how do you handle baggage fees?
I do not check my bag. I will if they ask, like at the gate, like you said, if it's free. I don't want to deal with it. Most of the time I'm in the last boarding group. I'm not paying extra to be like, I'm always an F, you know? So I will be like, yeah, sure, take it if you want for free. But I would much rather not have to wait after. I like getting off the plane. I like leaving. I don't want to wait for my baggage. And the price is also a big factor too.
How do you get past the 3.8 rule? You know, the carrying, you just make sure that you don't have any liquids or anything that you need that are more than that.
I have, like you can buy generic little bottles, and then I fill it with like my face wash or whatever. And I just bring that, whatever I need. I have like a travel shaving cream thing. So I don't buy like the super overpriced travel ones. I just buy a generic one. And I fill it with the one that I have at home, and I've never had an issue with it.
There you go. There you go. Tom, what about you?
Well, you know, I don't travel alone generally.
Yeah.
And my partner has a very large bag and cannot travel with her pillow and stuff. So I don't know. I haven't tried to take a full-size Mondo suitcase on the plane yet, but we check, and we do have that credit card. We've had it for a long, long time. I never realized how valuable it was going to become.
Yeah.
And until recently, and with Southwest, it's up to 8 people in your party. So, you know, I mean, it's crazy.
Well, there's no reason at this point not to have, if you fly twice a year, and you check a bag, then that's a couple $100. And in most cases, most all of the cards will qualify you for free baggage. There are some free cards that some airlines issue that don't contain the baggage benefit, but by and large, most of them do. And so it's something to think about. Think about the year ahead, and you know, maybe you can pick up a little bit of a points bonus. You know, we talked about how those are being devalued and the like, but still, there might be some value to you there. Also, some of the airlines, I noticed looking at a Delta ticket the other day, that Delta allows you to pay your baggage fees with points and miles. So that might be a useful, a good use of those things, especially if you're traveling with a horde of people, to be able to use miles and points and not have them sitting being devalued in your account.
Well, I think a lot of times it depends on where you're going and how long you're going to be gone as to whether you need to have a bag large enough to need to check it, because you're going to have enough change of clothes and all of that. If it's a short stay, whatever, then, you know, pack one of those small babies and you're on your way.
That about wraps it up for us for this week. As Tom reminded you a few minutes ago, we're going to do a mailbag segment next week, which is something traditional we do every couple months here at the Travel Guys, where we answer your questions. So if you haven't already sent us one in the last month or so, send them. Go to travelguysradio.com. Give us whatever your travel question is or idea or inquiry or even something about a destination, and we will try to get you on as a part of the program next week.
Don't forget, that's travelguysradio.com. Thanks for joining us today. I want to remind everybody that Mark is with a company called Sports Leisure Vacations. You need to check their website if you're interested in travel. It's the best way to go. I know there's a couple of ball games left to San Francisco. I might have to snag one.
Yeah, the baseball trips have been very popular. One of the things that we do 7 or 8 times a year is take people for the day down to the ballpark. We have some very good seats that we occupy down there on the club level. And traffic is getting to be what it is, going to and from the Bay Area. Taking the bus and not having to worry about that, having a couple beers at the ballpark is the way to go. Thanks for the cheap plug there, Mr. Romano. Anyways, you all dance like nobody is watching, and we will see you next week, next Saturday morning at 11 o'clock or on the podcast. Life is ever known.